Welcome to the Bregman Leadership Podcast. I'm Peter Bregman, CEO of Bregman Partners. We help companies achieve ambitious goals by strengthening leadership throughout the organization. I created this podcast to share ideas that you can use to become a more powerful and courageous leader. Here with me today is Mark Schoen. He wrote an absolutely fantastic book that I adored, Your Survival Instinct is Killing You, Retrain Your Brain to Conquer Fear and Build Resilience. A lot of the ideas in this book are very resonant with the ideas that we use in the leadership intensive around building emotional courage. I'm sure we'll talk about that. It's a smart book on a number of different levels, both on the ideas, but also on how to follow through on the ideas, how to take action. Mark is an assistant clinical professor at UCLA's Geffen School of Medicine, where he teaches courses on mind-body medicine, as well as performance and decision-making under pressure. He has a busy private practice working with individuals and organizations, and he conducts research on resilience, hardiness, hypnosis, and performance. We are lucky enough to have Mark with us today on the Bregman Leadership Podcast. Mark, welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Mark, let's start with the big idea behind Your Survival Instinct is Killing You.
Basic theme is we humans have had all these wonderful technological advances, all of which have made our lives so much more comfortable. But as we've become more comfortable, we have paradoxically become increasingly less tolerant of being uncomfortable. And the end result is that our ability to manage stress and pressure has now become weaker than it was at one time. And so the very thing that's helped us is the very thing that is actually now beginning to hinder us.
And so the bottom line to it is that I don't like being uncomfortable, and as a result, I avoid that discomfort at all costs, and that plays out in a variety of different ways. Am I understanding that right?
You know, exactly right. I mean, at one time, as a primitive human, being able to avoid and recognize discomfort and then to get away from it increased our chances of survival. But in today's time, those instincts that worked to preserve the species years and years ago are the very things that are holding us back in the present time.
Can you give me an example?
Well, you know, one time, like if we felt genuine physical threat, you know, a lion chasing after us, someone throwing a spear, it made sense to run away. And so this stress, or what I call the survival instinct, which is essentially the fear response, served a great purpose. But in today's times, this fear response, survival instinct, is going off in times when there is no genuine physical threat. Someone cutting us off on the freeway, or arriving late at a meeting, or someone hurting our feelings, or messing up an appointment that we expected to have. These are genuine physical threats. And the effect is that now this fear response is going off so much more often. And the end result, it's compromising our ability to perform well under pressure, stress, competition.
So let's be really specific. Let's say somebody comes to me and criticizes me. They give me negative feedback. They tell me that my performance in the last meeting kind of left something to be desired. And I go into that stress response, and I go in and I'm responding from the part of my brain, from the amygdala, from the reptilian part of my brain that is the part of the brain that was incredibly useful when I was being chased by a saber-toothed tiger, but in this situation not so much, and I get defensive and I retreat, or I might run away, or I might argue back, when really in that moment I should actually ask a question and listen and find out where my performance could have been better.
Yeah, you know, an excellent example. And it's true. I mean, we are a social animal. And that means we learn very early that having connection with people is very important to our survival. And nowadays, if someone hurts our feelings, it goes against that old biological mechanism that feels like rejection. I'm being not approved of, or people are going to not take me seriously, or I'll feel humiliated. And so it pushes this old feeling that means like, oh my God, I'm going to be alone. No one's going to like me. I'm going to lose everything. And in doing that, it makes us take or have reactions that are so over the top based on the situation.
Mark, it's fascinating. It's actually why when you hear research that says people fear public speaking more than death, it actually puts that into context, which is to stand up and be humiliated is like death to them, that we confuse embarrassment or humiliation or even uncertainty with physical danger and physical harm. And we actually think, if I go through with this, if I take this risk, if I bring up this undiscussable issue, if I, you know, if I raise a question they don't want me to raise, that I might actually die, right? We don't think we're going to actually die, but the feeling is I might actually die. And so we don't do it. We don't take the risk. We don't raise the difficult conversation. You know, we limit our progress and our performance. And we also shut down in arenas when it would be helpful to actually show up.
Yes, very well said. That's exactly right. And what a hindrance this is. And maybe it'd be helpful to your audience just to give a minute explanation how that happens, because it's not logical. And, you know, guys like don't tend to think of being unsafe or going to that extreme. We just think of being uncomfortable or edgy or stressed. But this amygdala, the part that you're talking about, is the fear and anger center of the brain. And it's goal is to basically discern, are we safe or are we not safe? And it's black and white, and it's a function of how uncomfortable we feel. And if a certain amount of discomfort arises in our body, it crosses a threshold, and this fear center says, okay, I must be unsafe, I must be in danger. And then it hits this fear trigger, and then we take and react in ways that are not helpful, basically making choices that are based on protection or trying to defend ourselves or even doing things to keep ourselves from losing, even though the probabilities are, well, a better chance of succeeding than there are of losing.
You know, you talk about, I might be jumping ahead here a little bit, but you talk about a breath technique that helps. And I want to say that one of the things that I love about it is that you read so much about, you know, the stress response and the reaction we have to reeling out of control, and that someone yells at me and I get maybe defensive. And so many solutions go to an intellectual response, meaning, and I talk about this too, like, let's let the neocortex, which is the thinking part of the brain, let's let the neocortex handle the amygdala. Let's let the thinking, logical part of the brain talk down the emotional, out of control part of the brain. But you're saying something different, which I find fascinating, which is you're saying basically you're having a physical response to an emotional situation. Let's respond to it with a physical response that tempers the physicality of that, which is what's getting out of control in the first place. Can you, first of all, have I understood that correctly? And can you maybe even share with us what that technique is?
Yeah, the bottom line is that, again, high levels of discomfort in the body are interpreted by this fear center of the brain as danger. And since our lives are not going to be structured in such a way that there will not be discomfort, discomfort is inevitable. So if we're just trying to always mitigate it with a drug or strictly a breath technique or a cognitive strategy, well, that's really a short-term solution and basically says to us, well, I can't handle discomfort. I have to quickly allay it so I can be okay. Well, by doing that, we then make the issue of discomfort an even bigger issue and something more to fear. The real way to do this, I believe, is to train ourselves so that when we feel discomfort, it does not push the fear button. So the goal of my techniques is not to banish discomfort, but to train that part of the brain to not experience discomfort as something to fear.
So we become comfortable with discomfort. We become used to discomfort.
Yes, we now experience discomfort in a whole new way. Not because we're telling ourselves to feel it differently. You're right, because everyone wants to rely on these cognitive techniques, which are essentially like trying to lecture a child that's having a temper tantrum. We then want to say, look, hey, discomfort is inevitable. How can we train our brains so that when we feel it, rather than going to being a scared little child, that we can manage it like an Olympian.
So this is really powerful because it's changing our expectations of life, meaning it's basically saying, look, the goal is not comfort. The goal is to achieve the things you want to achieve or move through life the way you want to move through life. And in order to do that, you will inevitably feel discomfort. And so the goal in terms of managing stress isn't to relieve the stress or balance your life or to, you know, avoid that kind of discomfort, but it's actually to weather it. It's to become used to it, become friendly with the discomfort. Know that if I'm going to have a difficult conversation, I'm going to feel uncomfortable. If someone's going to criticize me, I'm going to feel uncomfortable. And acting in the face of this discomfort in a way that's useful and productive is the key both to being successful, but also to kind of surviving in a healthy way.
Exactly. And, you know, maybe a good metaphor to use for this, or I mean, an analogy, is that, you know, we all accept that a certain amount of pain is necessary for gain in a physical sense. We all accept that. But how often do we think about that in terms of this discomfort model or an emotional model? We think, oh my God, I got to avoid this discomfort. I got to get away from it. But really what we're trying to do is build up what I think of as the discomfort muscle.
I love it. I love it. And what I talk about, you know, we do this leadership intensive, and what I talk about, the focus of it is building our muscle of emotional courage. And what I mean by emotional courage is the willingness to feel everything. That underlying our ability to act, the path to freedom in a sense, is my willingness to feel everything. If I'm not having a hard conversation, or if I lose my ground in the face of criticism or uncertainty or success or failure, it's because there's things I'm not willing to feel. I don't want to be rejected by you. I don't want to be shamed. I don't want to be humiliated. I don't want to fail. I don't want to feel what I might have to feel like if I fail. The willingness to feel everything allows us to do anything. If I'm willing to feel everything I may have to feel, then I am free to do anything. There's nothing that's going to stop me, because the only thing that stops me is my fear of feeling something.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Because, you know, once you start filtering out certain parts of who you are, it doesn't stay that specific. It starts going to other areas that you don't want to filter out. So absolutely.
So here's my question. How do we do that? How do we become comfortable with discomfort? How do we expand? How do we build that muscle and expand our capacity to act intelligently, usefully, productively in the face of these emotions that are driving us in the opposite direction?
I think the way to start with this is what I do in my course at the university, is I increasingly expose my students and athletes to increasingly higher levels of discomfort. But it's not discomfort for the sake of discomfort. It's putting ourselves in uncomfortable situations and then pairing it, associating it, almost like classical conditioning, pairing it with a whole other feeling. Okay, I need to say this better. If we think about what the effect is, when we feel discomfort, the fear center goes off. And so it's just one part of the brain operating under uncomfortable conditions. What we want to do is bring in other parts of the brain that have nothing to do with fear, so that when we feel something uncomfortable, now the fear response is diluted compared to the larger part of the brain being activated at the same time. So what we want to do is expose ourselves to discomfort, but activate other parts of the brain and body that counter the fear reaction.
So let's actually play this out. Let's say one way to do that, let's say in our environment, in a leadership environment, we say to somebody, okay, you know what? We know that you get triggered when people criticize you. Go to three different people and collect feedback on yourself. We ask people to do this, right? So go collect feedback for yourself and ask what you're doing that's working, and also very specifically what you're doing that's getting in their way, or what you're doing that makes life more difficult or draws us farther away from our goals or the organization's outcomes. And listen to their feedback, and listen to especially their criticism. What would you advise them to do as a way of building the muscle in the context of a process like that?
I would start even before that, take some preliminary steps. Remember, the very issue that creates discomfort in the context that we're talking about has to do with judgment and approval. So, okay, then let's create situations where that issue will come up before they test it out in the work environment. So how do you do that? Well, one way is going up to people you don't know and introducing yourself and putting yourself out there. Maybe it's someone that's attractive. This would be outside the work situation, someone that's attractive or someone that you can associate with a lot of prominence. Anything that makes you feel uncomfortable, and you practice in these situations. Other ones I like the people do before they bring it into the business context is to do things also like, what if you never could sing before? Take a singing lesson and sing in front of people, or play an instrument and play your instrument in front of a group of people, or go take up dance lessons, or do what I love a lot that works really well is have people take improv classes. All of these push that button of being uncomfortable. Then once we build up that muscle in these other situations outside the business situation, it makes it so much easier for people to start doing that in the work environment.
I love it. So now give us some techniques when we're doing that to manage that response, to increase our capacity to manage that discomfort.
The goal, okay, is to associate discomfort with no threat. So how I start with this is you mentioned this breathing technique that I have, that, and I offer it for free to people if they want to have it, is you start having people first in their mind imagine doing something that's really uncomfortable, and then we pair it with like this breathing technique. Now, the goal isn't to make the uncomfortableness go away. Goal is merely to know that I can feel uncomfortable and nothing bad is going to happen. So first we have them imagine these events, and they will precipitate anxiety and uncomfortableness. And once they can do that with limited fear response, and the fear response, of course, would be a more rapid heartbeat. It could be getting warm, could be getting sweaty, it could be a numbness, could feel a tingling, could be a spaciness, all the things that are part of the fear response. Then we have them step up to something they actually do. So it could be any one of these things that I describe with other people. And again, before they would do the event, they would do this breath technique and then do it.
Could you describe the breath technique briefly, or could we just do it right now, you and me?
Sure, absolutely. You would start just by sitting, normal sitting position, hands on your lap, hands on the side or slightly open, sitting back against the chair, or you could sit on, I like it sitting on the floor, actually, because I want to be a little uncomfortable. And then you take an inhale, a medium inhale, not some large diaphragmatic breaths. And so you take that, you hold it for a second, and then you follow it with four exhales, but they're partial exhales, and there's no inhale between them.
And are you doing this through your nose or your mouth, or it doesn't matter?
You take the inhale through your nose with the mouth closed, and then you do the exhales through the mouth, and they sound like this. So three partial sh sounds, and the final one just extends the breath out, and then you start over. And the rhythm is probably like this. This is the speed we'd want to go. Kind of like, here's our inhale. First exhale. Second. Third. Fourth. Like that. And the sound is important. Key part, no inhale between the first three exhales. And the power in the approach is in the exhale, not in the inhale.
So you don't want to inhale too much, but you inhale enough so that you can do all four of those exhales without running out of breath beforehand.
Yeah, I mean, if someone finds that they have some difficulty doing it for four, they can do it for three. But I found four generally to produce the best results.
And then you repeat it in a cycle?
I like people to do it 3 to 4 times. Usually gets the result. When I created this breath technique around 1984, 85, I ran people through all these biofeedback tests, and I found out in 3 or 4 times it produced massive changes in the blood pressure and pulse.
And that's something that they can do, people can do in order to, when they're in discomfort, in order to kind of reclaim their center and manage the discomfort. It's not meant to get rid of the discomfort, but it's meant to build your capacity to stand in the discomfort.
Exactly. You know, that which we try to get rid of is ultimately that which we fear the most and gains the most power. And in this way, by incorporating it into something that's just part of our lives, we take the power away.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this as I was reading the book, and I was thinking, you know, there's some kind of discomfort, and it could be exactly the same discomfort. I could work out really hard, and my muscles are really sore, and I feel fantastic, and I can withstand it. But the same feeling, if I haven't worked out and I think I'm sick and my mind can spiral into thinking, wow, I might have something really serious and what if it's really bad? And that discomfort becomes almost unbearable. And so in a sense, the you know, for the sake of what becomes an important question to the discomfort.
Yeah, you can see how, you know, we can be very good for physical discomfort, you know, in terms of exercise and things like that. But we can be pretty darn wimpy when it comes to emotional discomfort.
Thank you so much, Mark. This is such valuable information. The book is fantastic. The lesson that we our survival instinct has helped us to avoid discomfort, but in fact, what our survival instinct needs to do is to help us weather discomfort and be in discomfort and not allow the discomfort to lead us to do things that ultimately actually hurts our survival more, right? Or actually, you know, creates a level of agitation in us that moves us behind in what we're trying to achieve and how we're trying to live. The book is a fantastic book. I really loved reading it. Your Survival Instinct is Killing You. Retrain Your Brain to Conquer Your Fear and Build Resilience. Mark, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Bregman Leadership Podcast, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. For more information about the Bregman Leadership Intensive, as well as access to my articles, videos, and podcasts, visit peterbregman.com. Thank you to Claire Marshall for producing this episode, and to Brian Wood, who created our music. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next great conversation.